Now this is more than a hobby. Give them more like I'm Bobby. This is my team and they got me. Shout out to Billy, we're bonding. We got us 3 cups, mate. I know it ain't too late. We'll turn that 3 into 4 and turn that 4 into 8. So come on, you Irons. It's time, throw on your claret and blue and listen up to this rhyme. 112 years, wow. Iconic bowling ground at London Stadium now. Blowing bubbles from the crowd, let the Premier League know. The Irons going for the gold, scoring 100 plus goals like Paulo Di Canio. So kick it off at the homies, known as Brawley and Tony, and keep on blowing those bubbles until they bring us a trophy. I'm forever blowing bubbles, and my fortune's always hiding. It's the American West Ham podcast, y'all best dialing. I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles, and I'm forever blowing bubbles.
All right, here we go. Welcome to the American West Ham podcast. This is season 1, episode 7. This is our second take. At episode 7, I'm one of your hosts, Tony, and I also have Brawley here.
What's going on, Tony? How are you?
Terrible. Absolutely terrible. My weekend has been terrible. I worked overtime this weekend. I had to watch my team absolutely shit the bed. Our fellow supporters are upset and distraught, just as I am, hurting deeply inside. And on top of that, I just got a ticket 15 minutes ago for allegedly running a stop sign. So my weekend was just cherry on top there. How are you doing?
I've been better. Certainly been better. This yesterday really put a damper on things. Just when you thought it couldn't get any worse, sure enough, things got a hell of a lot worse. And I didn't see it coming, honestly. It all started with the cancellation of the march, obviously. And then the board, the rumor is that the board paid off Andy Swallow and Mickey, whatever his name is, from the real West Ham fan action group. And other marches have been tried to get started.
Do you think they did?
I have no idea. I don't know what.
Well, yeah, I don't think they actually did. But anyway.
That's what everyone's thinking, which just adds more fuel to the fire, and yesterday happens. There's no march, or there was a tiny mini march, and then we go 1 goal down, 2 goals down, and all hell breaks loose.
Yeah, it was a sad day, and the frustrations are finally boiling over even more. I had a pal of mine ask me how we got here, and it wasn't just a one-day thing. It's been building up, and it's finally a full-fledged disaster right now, you know?
Yeah.
I absolutely dreaded doing this today. I really didn't want to. Like, I enjoyed doing this, but there's no straw that broke the camel's back. I'm West Ham. I can't change that now, nor would I want to. But, man, I feel sick to my stomach.
Yeah, it'd be a lot easier supporting one of the big clubs right about now.
But I wouldn't have it any other way other than the team play better.
No.
One thing I want to say,
sorry to cut you off.
No worries.
I don't know if we have many listeners that aren't West Ham fans. I know about a few friends of mine. And who aren't West Ham fans who listen to this show, and some people outside the West Ham world think we're expecting like top 6, top 4 football, and that's why this is all going down, which is totally not the case whatsoever. So I kind of just want to explain to some people who maybe don't understand. This has been going on for years. It all started with the stadium move, is really what it all boils down to, is that's the centerpiece. No one wanted to move, honestly. None of the real West Ham fan base wanted to move. Now, a lot of people gradually warmed to the idea with all of these so-called promises that the board has made to the fans, like attracting top players, playing good football, challenging for Europe. And so what we're pissed off about right now isn't what is actually going on the field on a week-in, week-out basis. Now, that has contributed to it. We shouldn't. We basically, with this stadium move, we shouldn't be challenging for relegation. And there's not been money spent on players. I mean, this is. I mean, I could. There's tons of stuff that I haven't even talked about. But what people need to understand is that it's not us trying to be greedy like Arsenal fans bitching about us not challenging for the top. I mean, this is a whole lot more deeper than just that. Yeah.
It's deeper than that. And to be completely honest with you, I think a lot of West Ham would agree, and I've saw plenty of videos of fellow supporters who I completely agree with saying the football doesn't help, but we don't. We were fine with that 9th to 15th being that kind of club with a cup run here and there. We were fine with that. The issue comes along with the move, and I think people embrace the move thinking that it would take us to the next level. But really, I don't think anyone, in my personal opinion, was like was sick of being a 15th to 9th club. Like, I'm fine with that. I liked the Bolton. I will admit I do. I like the London Stadium. I like the Bolton more. I don't have an issue with the London Stadium because my seats are fine. But I've seen, like, I went to hang up my flag a few times on the second level before they stopped banning flags again. And those view up there, man, that's far. I don't care what they say. There's no way that's as close or far as Wembley, whatever they were saying. My seats in the lower level were fine, but it's not what they promised. The football is not what they promised. The stadium's not what they promised. Changing the badge and a little bit of the history of the feel to it, it's just not what it was, and I don't think people are very happy with that.
Yeah, and another thing I'll add to what I was saying, if I think a lot of people are happy with 17th, honestly, as long as we stay in the Premier League, and that is if we stayed at Upton Park. So had we not moved, and people are okay with escaping relegation every year. I mean, we could accept mediocrity if we're in our sacred home, but that's not what we were told. That's not what we were expecting. When we moved, there was these thoughts that we shouldn't even be touching relegation. So if this was going on at Upton Park, at the Bolton, I don't think any of this would be an issue. Yeah, we would be upset that we're playing poorly, as any club would. But we can accept not being the best team on earth if we're playing at Upton Park. And now, when I don't know, we're just going in circles, it seems like. And the bottom line is we got to be better. We got to have more money spent. We need to have better players. Our squad is not very good right now. It's just
not good enough.
Yeah.
So let's get into the lineup because I'm sure that we're going to get into it at some point. Let's see. So this is part of the issue right now is our lineup. We start with Joe Hart and net.
Yep.
Two outside backs were Zabaleta and Antonio. Three center backs of Cresswell, Ogbonna, and Collins. Midfield of Noble and Cech. And then Mario on the and then Zini, then Marco. We're our starting 11. My thoughts on the 11 was I don't like the midfield. I think Cech has been terrible this season. I think he's not been great. I think Mark Noble has been putting in shifts, but I didn't think he had his best game yesterday. Lanzini and João Mario barely got a chance to even touch the ball, making it impossible for Marco to get through. Now, I felt like we had some big chances in the first half, but once they scored that first goal, it was all downhill from there. But before we get into the goals, do you want to say anything about the lineup?
Yeah, I just think there's too many square pegs and round holes. Like, Antonio should never be playing left wing back. He doesn't have a left foot. I mean, I've heard people trying to justify playing him on the left side and people saying that he wants to play on the left side. Well, that's fine, but he doesn't have a left foot. Like, he was just flailing his foot at the ball, and they go fly. His crosses were atrocious. Now, his runs were great. I love him going forward, But when he has to cut it back on his right side, it just takes too long. So
it gives the opportunity for them to catch up.
You hit the nail on the head with Cuyate. I mean, he just atrocious. He shouldn't be playing in the central midfield. I don't even think he should be in the starting 11. I don't know about this back five anymore.
He doesn't offer anything, in my opinion. He's just a big body. He hasn't done anything going forward, and he hasn't defended well. So if he's got to do either one or the other or both, and he's done neither.
Yeah, and this back five system that we're going with right now, it obviously is not working. I mean, whatever we're doing right now isn't working. We've shipped 4-4-3 in our last three games. So clearly something is not working. Joe Hart, we need to talk about him. He was pretty bad. I don't even know if he had a save to make, besides the one that he parried back out, for the tap in for Wood.
Two were just good shots, last one was definitely on him. No excuse. And if for someone who's trying to get in to be the England number one, that was not it.
Yeah, so I wanted him. For the record, I wanted him to start.
Agreed. He didn't do us proud there.
Yeah, it's just no one wants to take the bull by the horns right now. It just seems like there's guys that can come in and make a difference, and they're just not doing it. And him being the most obvious one, like, I mean, here's your chance, man. This is your chance to get right back in there. Now, the first two goals were not on him. Those were unstoppable. But I don't know that he actually had a save to make besides the one that he kicked. Because I don't have the stats in front of me, but I don't think Burnley had many attempts on goal. And I think the one that was savable, he saved it, but he parried it right back out into Wood to tap in.
So they had four shots on target and three goals. Yeah, so that means
the two that went in, and then the one he saved and the one they scored on the rebound. So he made the one save that he could and knocked it right back
into the rebound.
So that's what I was thinking. I could only think of four shots on goal, and those are those right there.
And I don't want to blame like one person because that was a great save in the first half. But can you imagine like the different scenes it would have been if Lanzini could have tucked that little shot home that was a kick save?
Yeah.
Rather than just powering it or getting it up in the air, he tried to roll it past him, and it was an easy kick save. It was a smart kick save, but he didn't really seem like he was troubling them. So I'm like, that would have completely changed the game. We would have went up 1-0. Maybe the crowd would have gotten even more behind the team. And now, no way I'm saying it's Lanzini's fault, but I'm just saying if we could have got one of those goals, because we had the opportunities in the first half.
Well, the first half we were dominant. That's what I said. We were the only team in the first half.
If we would have finished one of those, it would have been a completely different game. Instead of talking about what happened off the field, we would have been talking about a win or maybe a draw, but we got behind the team and we can see some positives. But once they scored that first goal, all hell broke loose and it was bad. And here we are complaining, and I don't want to say I cried, but I will admit that my eyes teared up just a little bit because I was hurt when they scored that second.
Before we get there, I even thought we opened up the second half pretty well.
Yeah, I agree.
We had a chance. We had came out. Arnautovic had a clean through. He was clean through on goal with one-on-one with the defender. And what irritated me, I remember I specifically watched it thinking at the time, well, this is something I'm going to want to talk about, because in the 52nd minute, Arnautovic is running forward. He's the only guy up there, and everyone it started from our defense, and everyone was just jogging up the pitch. No one had any urgency to get up the field. I remember specifically watching for it. Even I think Mario was just jogging. He wasn't even trying to get up there in the play, and Arnautovic was on his own with four Burnley guys chasing him down, and we should have scored too. I mean, if he would have had some help up there, He could have passed it back and scored, or I even think he tried to. Lanzini was the only one running up there with him, and I think he tried to cut it back for Lanzini, and it didn't come off for him. But I mean, I think the players are getting away with too much right now, and they're not getting any stick. It's all about the board right now. I think the manager got it tactically wrong, and I think he's slow to adapt and he's slow to make changes, and that is unacceptable right now. And the players, this should be on them as well. I mean, they played like absolute shit. Has that come down to the board a little bit? Yeah. I mean, they're the ones that bought the players. But these guys on the field should be giving more right now, and they're not, and they're getting away with it.
I completely agree.
I'm sick of it.
Yeah, and I do want to add there, though, as much as I do agree, though, I do want to disagree a little bit because I don't blame the offensive three of Marco, Lanzini, and Zhao because I don't think the rest of the midfield and defense is getting it done. I think if we can get them the ball more and get them in good positions, I think that they would be doing better, but they can't even get the ball.
Yeah, I know. I'm just strictly talking about as a unit.
As a whole unit, I agree.
Yeah. The problem is right now is the attack and defense are two totally separate entities, and it's like they're completely separated in the game. There's nothing linking them up. It's that midfield we're dying for, and we probably need some new defensive players by the looks of things because, I mean, obviously that's not getting it done. But we have no link in the midfield that links it all up. We're two totally separate things, and it's not working.
They need somebody in the midfield to link the offensive midfielders. So not Lanzini, not João Mário, but they need either Noble to figure out how to connect the two.
Won't happen.
No, that won't happen. Exactly.
I love Nobes. He's a good defensive midfielder. I'm happy with him in the team. But Kouyaté is the one where it comes down to it that he's not getting it done.
Right. So they need someone who can link up the midfield and the attacking midfield and the defense so the attacking midfield can feed Marco. And that's not happening. That's why I'm saying that our midfield's not getting the ball up the field enough. And on top of that, if they had more possession in the midfield and attacked more, I would relieve a lot of pressure on the defense. It's just tough, man.
I totally agree. And then now we can get into the debacle that followed. So Ashley Barnes with a stunning finish. I mean, what a really, really good finish.
Unmarked, just ran right through.
Oh, Ogbonna should have been doing better getting to that ball in the first place. There's no way. I can't remember who fed him the pass. It might have been Wood. I don't remember.
I feel like he just jogged to close him down. He didn't even close him down.
Yeah, it was a long ball forward, and Collins could have been a little quicker to come across, but it wasn't on him. I thought it was on Ogbonna. And then lays it back, and Barnes with a stunning finish.
I think it was a one-time finish, too.
Yeah, it was. He took it first time. It was a great goal. Nothing Joe Hart can do about it. But that's when shit started to hit the fan, so to speak. We had the fan who ran at Noble, and Noble went over to confront him.
Which, for the record, I'm glad he did. I'm on Mark Noble's side here. I think Mark Noble gets way too much shtick from our fan base. Everyone's saying, well, he should have kept a calm head. Okay, I do agree with that. But for people to say that he's untalented and should just get out of the club now, he's the only one who's putting the effort forward from that lot. There's nobody. Him and Arnie. And maybe Lanzini.
And Ginge.
And James. Okay, so like four. I feel like the rest of them are just mailing it in. I honestly think that. I think that they go out there and play. But I don't think they give it their all. At least I haven't seen that. It doesn't feel like it from the TV. I'm coming over on, like I always say, I'm coming over final day, but I haven't been there. Last game I saw was, let's see, Stoke away and
Arsenal away in the cup.
Yeah. And then I was there for the first three of the season, but I just haven't seen it.
I know. There's just nothing good to talk about right now, and it sucks, and it's hard to talk about. But I'm in agreement with you. The guy who ran towards Noble, and he said he was defending himself. I don't totally believe that.
I don't believe that.
I think he was really, really, really pissed off at conceding the goal and the manner that they did, and to see someone running towards you. And you know it's not going to do anything good for your team. You need to get him off the pitch ASAP. I wish he would have landed a good punch on him or something instead of just pushing him the way he did. But Joe Hart came over and did a good job of kind of calming him down. But I'm fine with what Noble did. People calling for him to be stripped of his captaincy or sacked or dropped. It's just you're clueless. Yes, he's one of us fans, but he is in charge of that team, and to have people on the pitch while they're trying to make a comeback is not going to do any good for anyone at any time. Keep your protests off the pitch, in my opinion. Doing what you did around the director's box, I'm totally fine with. That's a really good way to show the board and right in their faces that you care and that you're not happy. I understand that. But this pitch invasion's got to stop.
Yeah, if I was there, I really wish I wish I was. I would have, well, I probably wouldn't have went over, but I'm glad people did. And I probably wouldn't have even gotten into that section anyway. But I'm glad they all tried to get up there and protest. But the stuff on the field was unacceptable, in my opinion. And the reason I just want to say one more thing about Mark Noble is he's hurting, man. If any of them cared the most, it's him. So I think the anger at him has got to stop. I think there's a whole bunch of other people on that field that are just collecting a paycheck, showing up, and going home. I genuinely think that. I think Mark Noble is probably sick to his stomach inside just as we are.
I totally agree.
Then to get the abuse on top of that, being the only guy who really seems to care, That's what really gets me angry, is the abuse that Mark Noble gets, and he's the only one who really gives a damn, in my opinion. Other than Marco, I agree. He's one of the Marco I saw walking around the field after the game. You know?
Yeah, we had a friend send us a video of him kind of walking around the outside by the fans and apologizing when it looked like he had tears in his eyes and. He gave his boots to a young kid. That was cool to see. Good for him. But I'm in complete agreement with Mark Noble. I will never say a bad word about him. I think he's worked too hard and put too much time into this club for us to say a bad word about him. He doesn't deserve any of the stick he gets. And should he have kept a calmer head? Yeah, maybe. But at the end of the day, he's in charge of that team and trying to get them back on track, and you running on the field. He wants to get them off as quick as possible. He did a better job of stewarding than the stewards themselves at trying to get him off the pitch. I'm sick of people saying bad stuff about Mark Noble.
I mean, we want to talk about why the march was canceled. The reason, and people want to say that they made strides with the stewarding. And they feel like they're making strides with making the club stadium feel like a home. That stewarding today was definitely not any improvement. I know it was only a week ago that they canceled and had these meetings, but that was absolutely... They couldn't control the protest in front of the box. They couldn't control people running on the pitch, which, I mean, I'm not saying it's easy, but, I mean, did you see the video of the guy sleeping? What?
I didn't see that.
You didn't see that video. There's a video of one of the stewards sleeping right in front of the stand. I don't know how you could sleep with it being that loud, but sure. People fighting in the stands couldn't stop that. I mean, it's what are the stewards even doing? I don't even know, man.
I'm not even gonna chime in on the stewarding. I mean, it is what it is. But. At the moment the second goal went in is really when it all started to kick off. And you started to see all the fights in the stands break out. You started to see all the people gravitating towards the director's box. And that's when I was like, well, fuck, what is going on? You see the fights in the stands, and then the Burnley players get up to let the kids go down and sit on the Burnley bench.
All right, so we are now back after a short break, considering I had to step away for work. So now it is 1 o'clock in the morning in the East Coast. However, it is 6 o'clock in the morning with our very random special guest that we had a call in. So Bobby from the Boston area, who is a Super Bowl loser. I promised I wouldn't bring it up, but I did anyway. Tell us about yourself, and then we'll just get back into talking about the game.
Yeah, sure thing. Thanks for having me, guys. I've loved the show so far. I think it's really great that Americans have a big voice in the club. I think that's important, and other international fans as well. I got involved with West Ham maybe 12 years ago. I think first season I started watching was 2006. It's like the back end of the back end of Teddy Sheringham's career. He was one of my favorites. So some relegations mixed in there too with the good stuff. But stuck through it all. Really, it was hooliganism that sort of drew me to West Ham. Read about the ICF, wanted to support a team in London. Was sort of fascinated by all that. So that's the reason I picked West Ham. I'm in London right now. Just had the chance to go to the Emirates today or yesterday, and then the Olympic Stadium the day before that. Although I don't know if it was as much of an opportunity that I relish looking back on it. But, yeah, I'm happy to talk to you guys about this game. The pre-match event with Dean, I also went to that the West Ham Way event. So that was a lot of fun. Dean's a great guy, top lad. Wherever you guys want to start, let's go ahead and get into it.
One quick question, if I may. Was this your first game, or have you been over before?
This is my first West Ham game.
Yes. Oh, Jesus Christ, what a first. Yeah. Ain't nothing wrong with that. Okay, so we left off when we were talking about it all kicking off, and the Burnley players let some kids sit in their seats. Where were your seats actually located at? Yeah.
So I was in Bobby Moore Lower.
Oh, nice. That's where my seats. What section?
Good spot. Yeah.
I want to say block 12. Is that right?
So you're in 154, right, Tony?
Yeah, I'm in 154.
153. Sorry, 153. That's where it was.
Oh, you're right next to where we were, where we are. Yeah. So that's pretty neat.
Yeah, since...
What did you actually think of the stadium itself? So this being your first time over.
Yeah. So
you don't have Upton Park to go off of, right?
I know. Yeah. So I was walking around where the Bullen used to stand on my way to the East Ham Men's Social Club. That's where the event was with Dean. So it was sad to see what had happened to our old home.
Our spiritual home. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. But so we got shuttled by bus to the stadium from the club. Got to walk up, saw like a lot of the other Olympic venues that were built that surround it. Massive stadium, pretty new age, looks pretty cool, looks expensive, all that jazz.
Yeah.
Went right in, went right to my seats. Luckily, I wanted to stand. I was hoping I could stand. So
you're in the right place in the Bobby Moore Lower.
Most of the guys in the Bobby Moore Lower were standing, so I was happy with that. Met some lovely English blokes at the event. We were sitting in the same section, coincidentally. So we just sort of went through the whole game together. I enjoyed the stadium for sure. I think it's it's a nice. Nice building. I don't know if it's a great pitch. I don't know if it's a great home stadium.
Sure.
But, that's my thoughts on the Olympic Stadium, I'd say.
And so, obviously, the result itself was not far from ideal. Far from ideal. So, the first half, before we get into the second half stuff, the first half was pretty good. Atmosphere was really good. You got to see the Bobby Moore tribute before the game.
Yeah, it was really cool how they set up all those signs on one of the touch lines. Yep, to put the number 6 up. So it was really special. I mean, obviously hearing the song for the first time, like in person, quite an experience. Definitely. In terms of the first half, I thought the way Burnley set up, they were pretty toothless to start.
Yeah.
I don't rate Ashley Barnes very highly. And I didn't really think that there was any hold up play for them to get forward. Any Dyke's team, I think, is going to be well organized. And, you know, their back four certainly is. And when the ball moves, you know, 10 players move with it. At least that's what I could see. I thought that in the first half, Antonio had a lot of space on the left-hand side. But I just didn't see the sense of urgency when he got the ball. You know, if you allow Burnley to get back and organize themselves defensively, they're a hard team to get breakthrough. Yep, so you really have to.
Yeah.
Yeah. You really have to. You really have to counter, and you have to be a little bit more direct. You know, he would get the ball out wide, and he would try to take on defenders, but it, you know, it just wasn't as direct as I was hoping for. But I thought it was, you know, at least in the first half, I thought it was a positive sign.
Yeah. I thought we dominated the first half for the most part. My only Antonio was getting forward very quickly. But his left foot is non-existent, so his crosses are atrocious. That was our problem. When you have to have him cut the ball back, that allows time for the Burnley players to close down, and then the attack is gone.
I was going to say that practically mirrored everything that we said in the first part of the show. You're mirroring it. That makes 100% sense that we're all on the same page. But I did want to comment, since you were actually there, rather than the play, since we all watched that, to be completely honest with you, Brawley and I didn't get to feel the atmosphere there because obviously we were watching on the TV. Did you find the first half atmosphere to be strong? Did you find that we were behind the side, or did you feel that it was negative from the get-go?
I'd say it was the former. You know, the chants were loud. The chants were pretty common. You know, every 5 or 10 minutes, you had another one coming up. I felt like we thought that we could win this game or at least get a result. And I thought that the atmosphere, you know, especially with the Bobby Moore tribute before, I think it was overall positive.
Yeah, I mean, I heard them loud and clear. And then when we had those attacks and almost scored, I think one of the things that, from my experiences at the new stadium, we had some absolutely amazing nights at the Bolin, but I've been to a few of the absolute dead atmospheres too. And I think that's the same for the London Stadium. Yeah, but one of the things that is incredible about the London Stadium is when you get 55,000 people singing Bubbles at one time, oh my gosh, I have chills right now. It absolutely is incredible. But at the same time, into the second half, it was quite negative. So, and you could feel it when they start turning on everybody. Did you feel that? I don't want to say sense of urgency, but nervousness around the ground.
Yeah. So, I'll say this: I dreaded the introduction of Chris Wood into this game. You know, I think he's a pretty dangerous striker, especially when you're not with your top center backs in the squad. So I sort of foresaw some trouble coming when he got introduced. And when I believe he assisted on the first goal and then scored the second.
Second and third.
And so I think the first pitch invasion happened after the first goal.
Yep.
If I'm remembering correctly. Couple pints at halftime might be jarring my memory. So the goal went in, and we were pretty, you know, you could tell the air sort of just left the room. We were pretty gutted. And then, you know, shortly after, as fans started to take the field, I certainly could feel a very negative reaction from the people sitting around me. Saying basically, like, you know, how are we supposed to come back? How are we supposed to get a result if you're distracting our players by invading pitch? And then it just kept happening and happening and happening. And they couldn't keep – it seemed like they couldn't keep anybody off that pitch. Nothing was sacred. Corner flags, you know, the center dot or whatever. All that's a hockey term. But yeah, it was total chaos at that point. And then it was back to fans turning on fans, you know, really just losing the whole point of being there, being together. I would say that the guys in the Bobby Moore lower, it seems like, you know, they all have those tickets. They've been going to games for a while, so they all know each other. So I didn't see that much animosity amongst them, but they were certainly directing it towards, you know, other fans, either on the pitch or you know, like in other sections.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you as well. So what I want to also ask as well was, did you have any thoughts or interactions or visions of the stewarding? Because that's come up in the last day or two of the lack of experience and lack of presence. Did you feel any or notice the presence of the stewarding, or did you just not have any issues in your section so it was kind of moot for your experience?
Yeah, so in our section, no real issues. You know, looking back on it, I can't tell you that I saw a lot of stewards or I felt the presence or the deterrence, you know, that stewards would are supposed to provide. You know, walk to my seat. If I wanted to get away with it, I probably could have brought my beer with me. You know, it didn't seem very strict. I don't know the Burnley fans. I'm not sure, you know, in the away section, I'm not sure what the deal was there. But yeah, nothing no real deterrence.
Yeah. Because when I'm over in my seats, over in 154, they usually just leave us alone now. When I was over there after that whole standing, sitting situation the first season, mm-hmm. Now it's just like, okay, whatever. But it just seems like, did you see, I know earlier we talked about it briefly, Brawley hasn't seen it. Have you seen the video of the steward who was sleeping?
No. God, yeah, gotta see that, huh?
Okay, gotta watch that. I guess nobody's seen it. So I'll send that out later for you guys.
Yeah, please do.
Brawley, do you have any more comments? Obviously, we have a bunch to talk about. I'm brain dead right now after that work session.
Yeah. So obviously, you said there wasn't any trouble where you were, but could you see people flooding towards the director's box when the first and second goals went in, or when did that start happening?
Yeah. So. It was after two goals, I believe. You could see them, like the sort of the outside walking track above the, you know, the 100s level. You could see people starting to mass and head towards the owner's box. You could hear the chants. You're unfit to run our club, and you know, you could see it swell as it drew closer to full time. So I actually had I was there with some other friends who didn't come to the West Ham Way event. And they actually said that they went over there just because they're not really West Ham supporters themselves, but they're like, yeah, we can't miss out on this. So they had some laughs at my expense afterwards, unfortunately.
Oh man. Yeah, that sucks. So you said you went with friends that aren't West Ham fans? So you weren't just on your own?
No, I am actually now on my own in London. They went back to the States. I'm actually going to Spain on holiday in a couple days. But yes, so they actually met me at the stadium because I got the shuttle from the event. Mm-hmm. None of them had ever been to the Lions Stadium either. And they did remark that it was a, you know, a modern new stadium, a nice facility. One of my friends who has been to a couple other, stadiums in London, and France, you know, did remark that the distance from seating to pitch is vast. You know, it feels like you're a mile away.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I think that I would mirror those thoughts. It really is a beautiful stadium. It's a great facility. It's just not a football stadium. It's not. They could turn it into with a little bit more money, I bet, or a little more thought.
Well, they have to take over the stadium to begin with. I mean, we have to own the stadium for that to change. But where we are in the Bobby Moore lower actually isn't that far from the pitch where we are, because we're kind of in the corner.
And the corner is actually the closest part.
Yeah, so we were, like, I was thinking when I went there, I was like, wow, this actually isn't that far away from the pitch. But when you go towards the center, towards the goal, or to the halfway line, it's really bad. And I think that's just the number one issue from 100% of fans worldwide is that, I mean, that's the consensus, is the seats are too far away. They need to move them all the way up. Outside of that, I really don't have many issues with the stadium. If they fix the seating and get it close up to the pitch, I wouldn't have any issues with it probably.
Mm-hmm. And I went out to dinner in like, you know, they have that big complex surrounding or like next to the park. I went to dinner, grabbed another pint. Nando's.
Okay, while you're in
England, you gotta get Nando's.
You gotta go to Nando's. Look it up tomorrow. Okay. How many more days you got?
Two.
Go to Nando's for lunch or dinner. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
A cheeky Nando's.
Get the 4-piece chicken thigh, extra spicy double chips with 3 peri peri chili oils. That is my go-to every time, folks.
Every single time. All right. You gotta DM me that order.
Oh, I definitely will, and I'm gonna have you send some back.
If you like chicken, you'll like Nando's because it's really good.
I do like chicken.
So you said you went to. I'm sorry to go back. We're going back and forth on the timeline here.
Yeah, it's okay.
But I'm really intrigued because I didn't actually get to go to the West Ham Way pre-match event. So, firstly, did you meet X?
No, I did not.
No? Okay.
I wouldn't know what he looked like if I did.
Well, yeah, I wasn't sure if he goes on stage and
he looks like
talks
a
or I was.
He does not. I think he probably does do some like greeting, but I flew in that day, so I was on time for Dean, but I was a little late for this like the start of the actual event.
Oh, gotcha.
So if he was there greeting people, I may have missed him.
Sure. Well, I just say that because he came on our show. I'm not sure if you listened to the episode, but he was really nice to us. And was that the guy? Was Dean Ashton the news he broke on our show that he was? Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, so that's pretty cool that you got to go to that one. Dean Ashton's,
or is it the one for the Watford game?
I don't remember which one it was. I don't remember. Either way, Dean Ashton was one of my favorite players growing up. I mean, my first West Ham game was on the opening day of 2008 against Wigan. He scored 2 goals, and we won 2-1 that day. And he came over on the preseason tour when we played the Columbus Crew and the MLS All-Stars, and he was really nice to me and took plenty of pictures with me over there. So that's really cool that you got to do that. After the third goal went in with Joe Hart parrying the ball away and then Wood following in the rebound. Did fans start to leave, or did that anger everyone more? Because I really couldn't tell because there was so much going on.
There was an early exit for sure. Yeah, I think people had seen enough. I think that those that were either anti-board or angry with the board, I don't think those were the people that were leaving. I think it was the people who had seen enough of fans turning on fans turning on the board on national television nonetheless. So I think it was really just people who couldn't take it anymore that were making for the door.
I want to say I was quite surprised that they showed so much crowd trouble on the TV. I'm not sure if you got to rewatch or if you have an NBC login and used a proxy or anything like that, but watching live on NBC Gold, I was really, really surprised how much they've actually shown, because you know how they typically turn away they don't encourage people. However, they were showing actual scenes on the TV of the protests in front of the director's box. The actual guys running on the field, they actually showed it, which was surprising, which to me, that it broke my heart. I agree with the stuff in the director's box. I don't agree with running on the pitch. However, after the game, I was so sick to my stomach after that 3-0 loss It feels like the club is just in absolute chaos, and it's disheartening. It really rips my soul. You know what I mean?
Okay, so actually, here's one thing I will say. I don't know if they showed this on TV, but as players invaded the pitch, fans invaded the pitch, our players were getting physical with those. With those pitch invaders. I don't know if they showed that on TV, but
the only one I saw was the Mark Noble one.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So Nobes, I think he shoved someone to the ground. He was really heated, obviously. I think I saw Collins trying to like collar, somebody else on the pitch. So
yeah,
I don't know what you guys' thoughts are on that. I'm not a real big fan of that behavior from our players. I don't think that's very professional. I know that yeah. They're passionate individuals.
Yeah, we talked about it earlier in the show, and so I'm not sure what's going to get cut and what's not going to get cut, but I'll basically repeat myself. With Noble doing what he did, I have no issues with it. So you got to think, if I was in that situation, so I just put myself in his shoes. So they just concede a goal in a relegation battle to a team on paper who I think personally we should be at least competing with. So we dominate the first 60 minutes of the game, and you concede a goal and you can hear everything start to turn on you. And then you have this idiot running at you, and he's one of us. I mean, he's hurting just as bad as we are. And then to have him come up in his face, I have no issues with Noble throwing him to the ground and telling him, hey, you're an idiot, get off the field. I have no issues with that at all.
I doubt that was the language he used.
Yeah, I'm paraphrasing. But if you're not prepared to take some heat from the players, don't go on the field as far as I'm concerned. If you're getting in the way of – so, I mean, basically it just does nothing. It contributes nothing. It only can hurt the team at that moment in time. So he wants
and
to get
did.
On with it.
It clearly did.
Yeah, you know, you can see 60 seconds later, the ball's in the back of our net again, and chaos breaks loose again. So I have no issues with what Noble, Collins, any of those guys did. You get what you deserve if you run on the field. All rules are off. All bets are off, as far as I'm concerned.
That you know what? That is fair. But I guess I'll take it back to stewards. If you kept these people off the pitch, you would be able to more easily protect the reputation of our players. You know,
totally agree with that. Mark Noble did a better job stewarding than the stewards.
Yes, exactly. If he retires.
Yeah, I know, right?
If he retires from the first squad, I think we know what his next career is.
So it's going to be a steward at the London Stadium. I don't know what it's like to be a steward, honestly. I guess I wouldn't sign up for the job if I wasn't prepared to be in that situation, but it's got to be pretty intimidating to have a bunch of people running at you. But that's what they're getting paid to do. So, and at the end of the day, they need to do a better job. I don't know what Tony, you kind of mirrored what I thought on that earlier.
Yeah, I'm not going to get too into it because we kind of already talked about that. But I do want to ask you, Bobby, what do you think of Mark Noble in general? Because he's been getting a lot of shtick lately, which I talked about earlier. I don't think he deserves. Is he the best player on the field? No. Is he an elite player? No. But he is West Ham. He's been West Ham. He's fought through all the shit. He's fought through all the terrible times. And in my opinion, not that he could do no wrong, but I think people were like, get out of the club, get him off, strip his captaincy, get out, he's terrible, blah, blah, blah. To me, that breaks my heart. Because he's invested his whole career, his whole life here. So, do you have any thoughts on Mark Noble? Are you like get out,
yeah.
Or are you like all for him? What's your thoughts?
He's like one of those players that has been a member of the team the whole time that I've supported West Ham. Collins left and came back, so I do have some sentimental feelings for Mark Noble. At the same time, you could see he's losing a step. He's slow to the ball. He's not closing on attackers in our defensive half. He's quality from the penalty spot. I guess I'll give him that. But at the same time, you know, name a central midfielder that you can play in that holding role that's on our squad today.
Exactly, spot on.
Right.
And it's a short list, you know.
It's only Cech and Obiang are the only other two that can play there, and Obiang's done for the season. And you could throw Zabaleta in there, but he's just as slow, if not slower, than Noble. So,
yeah. Yeah.
And Cech has been terrible as well. So, I mean, I think Noble's played better than Cech, but I think as well, if you want to look at it like that, Cech's terrible play has really put Noble in a tough spot, too. Mm-hmm. You know, he has to play central defensive mid for an extra guy. There's two ways. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I do know. I stick by my opinion. But.
Yeah. So to get kind of wrap this up a little bit, what would you say your overall experience is as an American traveling to see West Ham for the first time? I know that game is one in a million. There probably won't be anything else like that ever again. I mean, that I've never seen anything like that in my 24 years of living, anything quite like that. What would you say if you could just summarize your experience as a first-time American West Ham fan coming to see the club?
Yeah. You know, the product on the pitch was sort of secondary to me, at least for my first time.
Sure.
It was really about the people and the traditions of the club, getting involved with that for the first time. And everyone that I met, everyone I talked to, very welcoming, mm-hmm. You know, wanted to hear about, you know, how I began to follow the club, how I feel about the club, how Americans view the Premier League in general. And when we got into the stadium, you know, even just the people I was sitting around, also just very, very accommodating, very nice. And then singing the song, cheering for the team, you know, in my opinion, very, very positive. It does suck that, you know, some of the things that happened, but at the same time, it's going to be the most memorable experience for some time, I expect.
May I interrupt you and ask you a question? And by no means do I mean any people disrespect to somebody who hasn't seen us play, because I was that for a while. Do you feel, in a weird way, do you feel different? Do you feel like it's like just your tie to the club is even stronger now, or do you feel like just the same? Do you feel that you want to go to every single game now? Are you excited to go home and just watch on the TV? Do you feel any different? Because for me, when I went my first two times, I was gutted to go home and have to watch on TV after meeting all my new friends and stuff like that. Do you feel like you don't want to go back yet, or are you like, whatever, it was cool, but I'm glad to be back in Boston type of situation?
No, I definitely do feel a little bit of a closer connection with the club. I think that the next match that I'd like to attend would be West Ham away. Anywhere, I guess. Hopefully in somewhere else in Europe, but that may be a couple of years away.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Maybe in preseason. Yeah. That's what
I might be. Let me know when next time you're over. I always have a ticket, so I got you.
All right. Much appreciated.
Unless
unless you're going. So, you know, definitely want to see how we travel, how we support our team, you know, away at a different stadium.
Away days are the best, man. There's nothing like them.
I'm not going to lie. I prefer away games better than home games.
Oh, yeah. I think everyone does. When Tony and I, we were at Stoke away when Arnie scored on his return back there. And the support that day was unreal. It's my best away trip that I've ever had. I mean, that was a great, great, great day. I had a wonderful time. And there's nothing like watching West Ham go away and win. It doesn't happen very often. It doesn't happen very often.
He knows exactly what I'm about to say.
Yeah, I do.
What am I about to say?
Everton away, your first away experience.
Best day of my life, March 5th.
No, I know you guys had mentioned that that traveling to support the squad away and in some of your previous shows is the way to go. So, yeah, that's got to be the next one for me.
Definitely. If you, like I said, we got to get you back over. We'll all have to go at once. I was thinking, I just wish it would be cool, maybe if there was like a year notice, maybe like next March or something, or I don't know. I thought it would be cool if a whole bunch of Americans went at one time. Because I think,
yeah, that'd be great.
I think I saw a picture. One of the Cincinnati Hammers was over this weekend as well. So obviously you're from Boston, and so that wasn't you. But
one question I forgot to ask you that I really wanted to ask: were you planning on marching if the march was still happening? Ooh. Like, did you come just for this, or how long did you have this trip planned?
So, so I went into pretty big panic mode right around that Liverpool Slavs last game. And I figured that this may be my last chance to watch West Ham in the Premier League.
Oh my goodness. What a foresight there.
Yeah. So this was like a Black Friday flight that I purchased back in November to get myself over here for this game. So that was, yeah, that was like, if you don't do it now, you're never going to, you know, you may never get to. But I don't, you know, that's a pretty pessimistic outlook. But sure. I guess that was what was driving it. And then, you know, we had that January, that like December, January run against some top teams. We got some results, sort of assuaged my fears. But now I'm starting to feel that pit in my stomach again. So
Were you going to march if there was a march?
I would say no. I would have wanted to at least experience it or like see it. So I guess sure. I would have been marching in that respect. But no, my intention was not to protest the board, at least publicly.
Yeah, I can respect that. I think I said the same thing on our unreleased pod that I never edited and put out due to work again last week, that I appreciate everyone who did march or protest, and I completely agree with everything that's off the pitch, even this week. But I wouldn't have myself. I would rather sit and be with my friends and drink beer because my friends weren't marching. So, yeah, I can totally respect that, that I can hear your displeasures as well, but you're also, like, I don't know. I'm not going to speak for you, but.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think just I didn't want my first experience at the stadium with the club to be, you know, yelling at the owners to get out. So yeah, I was trying to be a little bit of a gracious guest.
Fair enough. Yeah, fair enough. Tony, do you have anything else to add to him?
No, I appreciate you coming on at 6 or 7 or 5 o'clock in the morning. I'm the one who's complaining about not getting any sleep and going to work in the morning. You're freaking heck, man. Let's see. Oh,
it's five,
only
it's
4 hours. 45. So
it's
5:45. Yeah. Jesus.
Just
Christ.
Hit daylight savings. Yeah.
So thanks again, yep. Man. Do you want to give us a shout out for your Twitter or your do you guys meet at the pub? We didn't even ask you that. Do you go to or do you watch at home? Where do you watch when you're in America?
Yeah. So the Boston Hammers meet at the Banshee in Dorchester. That's like. It's more just like a soccer bar than a West Ham dedicated bar. All my social media is Bobstonian, so Bostonian with an extra B in there. I'll leave you guys. Thank you so much for having me on. You know, I hope you guys keep going with the show. I want to know, what is that hockey sweater? That sweater.
I'm wearing this is a Chris Pronger Edmonton Oilers hideous killer. Oil drop jersey. Yeah. Chris Pronger was one of my favorite players. He was a Blue. So I collect hockey jerseys at the Wazoo. I mean, I have a walk-in closet, literally wall to wall full of them.
It's expensive.
Just wearing this. Yeah, yeah. It is expensive. I got this in the mail the other day, and I just decided to throw it on today. It's really cool. This is like the ugly, ugly jersey they wore for like 2 seasons.
Yeah.
They had to retire. All
right, so I want to leave you guys with maybe 2 things. Okay. And I'll keep it real quick.
No, go ahead.
At the end of the season, I would like to see us move away from David Moyes. He needed to fix the defensive record, and he didn't. And I don't think he's managed our players as well as he could have. He's playing players out of position. You know, I think it's we need a new manager. And the only other thing is, I sort of have a view of where the club should go. And it's basically going back to what we used to be, which was the Academy of Football. Mm-hmm. And so we need to continue to bring young players up through the ranks. We need to invest in them and to keep them healthy and happy. That's not shit that we've been doing recently. Sure. And then this might be a little more controversial. We need to then go and sell them for massive profit, which we can hopefully pay down our owner's debt. I don't understand. I've listened to X's interview. I understand why they have their loans, but I don't understand why they're not paying them off faster. So we need some money to pay off those damn loans.
And yeah, just to respond to what you were saying about Moyes, I'm pretty much in agreement with you. He had kind of swayed my view at the beginning. I was not sold on him at all, and I never thought he was the guy to go after for us. I kind of warmed to the idea, and then the first couple of games were pretty terrible. The Leicester game was good. The atmosphere was good. We looked like we were shoring up the back, which was good. But in the last 6-7 games, it's been an absolute train wreck in the back. It doesn't make any sense to me why we keep going with this 3-5-1 formation and then basically shifting. It's basically five defenders, but two of them can't even defend. One of them's playing out of position. Antonio's not a defender. I don't care what anyone says. He's not a defender. Zabaleta's slow, old. I love the guy, don't get me wrong. I think he's done a wonderful job this season, but he's not what he used to be. Cresswell is not a center half. I don't care what anyone says. He shouldn't be playing as a center back in a back three. I just don't know. He's so slow to make changes right now. He's so slow to adapt to anything going around him. Yeah. And I just don't understand why we keep if it's like it's just not working right now. So why do we keep going with the same formation? I don't know why we're not practicing something different, something else to bring, because our midfield's non-existent and our back five is not a back five. And then that just leaves either Hernandez or Arnautovic alone up front. And so totally agree with you on that one. And as in terms of getting youth involved and growing them and selling them, I don't know about the selling part. But I do agree we need to find a way to get this debt paid off quicker because that seems to be why we're not spending what we should be spending in the transfer window because these players aren't good enough. I mean, look, I thought they were. Honestly, looking at our squad on paper at the beginning of the season, I thought, wow, this could actually be a really strong side. But in January, we go and spend nothing. We profit from the window, and we go and get Jordan Hugel, who can't even he can't even come off the bench and provide anything. We paid $10 million for him, and he's not even getting 2 minutes at the end of the game. I mean, it blows my mind. I mean, these games where we're getting our asses handed to us, that kid could be using that experience on the pitch to get Premier League minutes, and I just don't understand why it's not happening. So I totally agree that this money, this debt needs to be paid off as fast as humanly possible. I don't know why it's taking so long. It sounds like they have bags and bags of money. I mean, I just don't understand why they're not paying it off quicker. I'm in total agreement with you on there. I just it blows my mind as to what's gone on this last couple of years. I don't know, Tony, what you think about that.
Well, I think one of the interesting things is I remember early in the season, I mean, the week right before the season, and Tony is a group chat. I put something on. You'd be printing money with West Ham being 6-5 to finish top half. I said that. Yeah. I said in the group chat, you'd be printing money at West Ham's odds 6-5 at finishing top half. I thought with our side, with our additions. I thought we were going to be absolutely nasty and a force to reckon with this year. And boy, was I wrong.
Idiot.
Yeah. So I do agree with the Moyes part. I thought Superslav had a tough time to getting the players going. Moyes came in, first week or two was tough, and then we had that new manager bounce that most seemed to get, where we had, what was it? It was either 12 unbeaten or 10 out of 5, 5 and 2, or whatever it is. And then the last 3 weeks have been an absolute disaster. It's the effort or the passion or the strive, the oomph, whatever you want to call it, that the team possesses. There's no urgency. I think, Bobby, you said lack of urgency at some point in the pod. Completely agree. Absolute disgrace. So he's got to go. They got a lot of sorting out to do. I don't even know where to go from here, because it's one of those things is where if you got to fix more than one thing. Is it the manager? Is it the players? Is it the atmosphere around the club? It's all got to be fixed. Where do you start?
Yeah, and one thing I'll add to that is, I mean, Moyes still has time to change my view on him. I mean, if we win 3 of our last 9 games or 8 games or whatever, it could change views. I mean, the crucial games we have coming up are obviously the Southampton at home game, and we also have Stoke at home. I mean, those 2 games are absolutely crucial. If he doesn't get a result in either of those 2 games, we're down. And then what happens when we go down? Who do we go after? Do you stick with Moyes? Moyes has no experience in the Championship, as far as I know. I know he managed Preston. I don't know what division they were in, but that was a long time ago. Do you stick with Moyes? Is he the man to get you out of it? Or who do you go after as a manager if we go down? If we stay up, by the skin of our teeth, what do you do? Do you stick with Moyes, who looks incompetent at times, or do you throw all the money in the world at Rafa Benitez? That's my number one choice. I'd throw anything I can at him to get him in the door. It's all up in the air right now. So, I mean, he still has time to change my mind, but it's going to be a really tough job with all the toxicity that's going on right now. It's all up in the air. I'm not writing anything off right now, but I'm more worried now than I ever have been at any point of the season.
Yeah, hoping for a miracle.
Yeah, I mean, that's all we got to hope for right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, now granted, we're not in relegation at the moment, so I guess to call it a miracle is a little bit of a stretch. But
sure,
I would say that there is nothing that Moyes can do at this point. I'm 100% ready to move on. It's just whether or not I look back at him as with hatred and disgust, or just plain old simple like disdain.
Fair enough.
That's where I stand. Agree with that.
Okay, so let's go to a quick Q&A. We have 2 questions today because we have 3 people, so that's 3 more opinions. Well, 1 extra opinion, which means more time. So I think we have 2 pretty dang good questions. The first one will be, how about Joe Lampard 2? Okay. His comment is, if the march had gone ahead, do you think that would have pacified some of the fans and having had the opportunity for them to let off some steam before the game, do you think we would have still had the trouble inside the ground?
I'll go first on this one. I will say, had the march gone on, you would not have seen anything close to what actually transpired in that stadium. I think the canceling of the march caused more anger and more uproar. Mm-hmm. I think it totally had an effect on what went on in the stadium. If the march happens, everyone's vented their feelings. Now, would there have been some animosity? Probably. I think I don't know if the pitch invasions would have happened, and I don't know that the mass gathering of people at the director's box would have happened. I think there still would have been people shouting at them, but I don't think you would have seen anywhere close to what happened if that march went on before the match.
Yeah, Bobby, do you have any thoughts on that one?
Yeah, to play devil's advocate there, you know, you could say that the fans would have possibly been emboldened or you know, whipped up in that whole pack or mob mentality.
True.
And sort of feeling, you know, invincible at the stadium, where they could protest or invade or whatever. I'd say maybe that you could have avoided the pitch evasions. You probably, you know, when you lose 3-0 to a team that averages like a goal a game, I think it's going to be pretty hard to avoid that owner's box situation. So that's my thoughts on it.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I see. Both of you guys made valid points. I'm probably going to go with Brawley, though. I think that, to be honest with you, I think they would have got it all out, and I think we would have gotten behind the team even more from the start. I wasn't there. I agree with you that we would have, that we were, that it sounded like they were behind the team, but I really think that people would have chucked it at the door and were ready to watch some football. And then I think it's just unfortunate. We talked about this quick in the earlier of the pod that we had the chances in the first half. If we were up 1-0 at halftime, it would have been a completely different atmosphere, yeah, second half, and a completely different outcome of the game. Obviously, if we would have scored, that's like a dumb thing to say. But I think if we could have gotten one of those chances in the first half, it would have been a completely different story. We'd be talking about completely different things, and we wouldn't be even having a protest discussion.
Mm-hmm. True. Do you have anything more do you want to add to that,
No, Bobby? I thought you were talking about
Tony.
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead, Tony.
No, I was going to say this is the perfect – yeah, hit us with the second question, because I think this question is actually the perfect lead-in from the first one.
Well, our next question we have is from Ben. His Twitter handle is at BLWillard24. He says he's traveling over for the Southampton game. Safe travels. I don't know if this is your first time over, basically his question is, how do you think the atmosphere will be at the Southampton game in 3 weeks' time?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll go first.
Yeah, go on, Bobby.
If that's okay.
No, of course. Yeah,
play it behind closed doors. Simple. That's it. I don't want to see that again. So I don't want people to see us doing that on TV again. So
I think there was someone, I don't know if it was like real or not, but I did see someone mention that on Twitter that there's potential for it. But I think because it did eventually die down on the pitch, it obviously was live still in the director's box. But I think because they finished the game that they decided that that wouldn't come about. But could you imagine? I just couldn't even imagine what they would do if they had to play behind closed doors. Would they even refund my money? that was my first thought. I did want to add, if anyone wants to help Ben out, he is looking for 3 tickets. I'm not, at the time of this podcast, I'm not fully sure if he's looking for 3 together. I know that. I only have 2, and I'm waiting on a buddy who sits around me to see if he's going to have his spare or not. But if anyone does have 3, help a brother out. So he doesn't have to rely on me last minute or pay exuberant fees from the club. If you're not planning on going and you got 3 tickets, please, please, please hit him up. Seems like a good guy. I never actually met him, but yeah, I mean, that's what happens on Twitter. But Brawley, do you have any thoughts on the Southampton game?
Yeah, I'm torn. Like, I think we as fans are better than this, and we'll learn from this. I know I would learn from this as a person, but I'm not sure the diehard supporters will view that the same way. I still think you're going to see a lot of animosity, and I think if you are the police or the FA or the West Ham board, you have to at least consider playing it behind closed doors. Now, I'm not saying that's what we need to do, because I don't think it's going to come to that. I think that would be I think it would cause more of an uproar if that happened. And then what happens when we go away the next week as that group of fans, that animosity is going to be built up. So I don't think that that's the answer. I think the atmosphere is not going to be great. I don't know if the board will come out publicly and say, David Sullivan really needs to come out and get in front of something, and he hasn't done it yet. he's the one that everyone's waiting to hear from. And I don't know if he can say anything that's going to make a difference at this point. But I don't know if anyone can say anything to make it better at this point.
You don't think it's going to simmer down over the 3 weeks?
I don't think it will. No, I really don't. I think everyone is going to be out of 10. Now, as I said previously, football fans are a weird breed where the longer you go without football, the more it feels like you need it. And, like, the summer break is the worst, or an international break is the worst, or an FA Cup break is the worst. And we have all three – we have all of those coming up in the next couple of weeks, which is why we're playing 3 weeks from now, which I think is crazy. But I don't think the atmosphere is going to be a fun one to be at. I think if we ship a goal early, you're going to start to see all mayhem break loose again. And Southampton can't fucking score. I mean, they are looking like the worst team in the league right now, besides West Brom. I mean, that's a given. We're pretty much writing West Brom off. But Southampton are playing terribly. And if we concede early to them, I'm scared as to what's going to happen.
Really ugly. What's the word when you don't care anymore? Empathy? Empathy? It's not sympathy.
Apathy.
Apathy. That's it. Apathy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking there's two ways it goes. Either A, like you said, or both you get – well, Bobby says closed doors, okay? Brawley's saying that you think it festers to a 10. And I'm thinking that it simmers down. I'm thinking anger turns to empathy, where people are so hurt. Because I'm hurting. I think it's disgusting. I think it's sad what's going on. What if anger turns to empathy, where I don't want to say people don't care, but it's just what happens. You know.
It's a possibility. You could definitely. And then what do you think the atmosphere is like at that point? Just no one singing, nothing's really happening, or what?
Just nervousness. Because, I would hope people get – I hope to see – this is a call from me. I hope people get behind the team. We are terrible right now. Our club is in chaos. But if we can stay up and get behind the team for these last 8 games and then sort it out in the summer, hopefully – but getting angry and turning and I was pissed off. I'm not going to say that I wasn't mad when they scored. But when they scored, it was more like a gut punch for me. I didn't get angry. I got nervous.
No,
if we can get behind the team for these last 8 games, somehow on earth stay up and then sort it all out in the summer. Get everything out on the table, put all the cards on the table and figure it out. That would be ideal, but if we're getting angry at games or causing mayhem, that's just not going to help anything. It's not. We'll be sorting it out in the championship rather than sorting it out in the premiership if it stays like this.
And I don't know if either of you guys heard what James Collins said in the car park on the way out, but apparently, I mean, he was getting some stick from West Ham fans and. He rolled down his window and said, if this continues, we won't pick up a single point the rest of the season.
It's true.
This cannot go on. He said, if anything like that happens again, it destroys the players and their minds go elsewhere. And then that's how you see the second goal go in, where you see two unmarked guys in the box just flash across a pass in front of goal and tap it in. That's just a complete lack of concentration, which you can understand. From all the mayhem going on in the stands around you see people fighting, you see people, fans running at you. I totally understand that completely. I can't say my mindset would be in the best of places if I saw that going on around me and that anger was directed towards me. So, and by the way, all of this is going on. We're sitting here talking about empathy and how the fans are going to react and how the atmosphere is going to be while the boys are down in Miami training for their warm weather training. They're enjoying life in the USA down in Miami while we're sitting here complaining about them. So it's pretty, hopefully they sort something out over there. Here, maybe we should all go down there and say what's up.
Wake them up.
lace them up. Yeah.
I was going to say wake them up, but that works too. Yeah. I really appreciate you coming on, Bobby. That was really cool to have somebody else on here. We haven't had a guest in about a few weeks. We've had our spotlights, but we haven't had actually someone come on and chat. Do you guys have anything else? I know you left us with a few things, and then we decided to keep you on a little bit longer. Any final words there before we get into our American Hammers spotlight we recorded last week that didn't go out from the Chicago Hammers? Anything else you want to finish us off with?
No, just to you guys. Thanks so much for having me. Looking forward to future episodes. Hope you guys, keep it up, keep the content coming, because I've certainly been enjoying it.
Thank you. It means a lot to us. I don't know how we managed to make it work out. I mean, it's 6 a.m. over there and you're still awake. So we really appreciate you staying up. I know you didn't stay up on our behalf, but we appreciate you coming on, and hopefully we'll talk to you in the near future. I'm sure we'll be in touch.
Yeah, I hope we can meet up in the States sometime soon.
Definitely.
Bro, anything else from you, bro?
No, that's it. Have a good one, guys. Hopefully, I don't know if we're going to have any episodes coming up, because we have a 3-week break. We haven't talked about this, but we'll talk about it off air. But hopefully we'll have something for the fans in the next couple of weeks. We'll see.
Yeah, I think we might take a mini break. I might put up some highlights from our unrecorded episode, but some of the content's outdated, so we'll see how that goes. But other than that, I think we'll just leave it there and head into our spotlight.
All right. Cheers, guys.
Thanks. Yep. See ya. All right, and welcome to our American Hammers group spotlight. We have Matt from the Chicago Hammers in today. How are you doing, Matt?
Very well, gentlemen. How are you?
We're good. We're good. We're glad to have you on. So tell us a little bit about yourself. So obviously you have that English accent, so I can tell you're not American. Mm-hmm. Whereabouts are you from originally?
So I grew up in Dagenham, which is in East London, yep. Hence why I'm a West Ham fan. My wife and I moved to Chicago about 5.5 years ago, and I was checking on Twitter to see if there was a supporters group based out here. At the time there wasn't, so came over, just started kind of going to one or two of the soccer bars, trying to find West Ham fans, and kind of went from there. And now now there's a few of us that meet every week to watch West Ham. So
brilliant. So would you say you started the group, or was there a couple of guys that started the group?
Mm-hmm. There was, when I turned up, there might have been 4 of us all together. Okay. There was nothing official. There's nothing on Facebook. There's nothing on Twitter. The club themselves didn't have anybody kind of listed out here as running a supporters group. So yeah, there were definitely people there watching before I turned up. But because I came over and I had a season ticket and whatnot, I was kind of keen to get things going on a bit more of an official stance. So we started back in at the end of 2012.
Great.
And and now here we are. We meet every week to watch the games, and sometimes we walk away from the pub happy. Sometimes like this weekend, it's a different story. But so
miserable. Yeah. Yeah, so I know you guys meet at AJ Hudson's up in Chicago. I've been there a few times. I actually went up to Chicago. I watched the Euros when England played Russia at AJ Hudson's. I was there, so that was also a miserable day. Do you have like a favorite memory that you have watching with them?
Yeah, I mean, do you know what it is? We've got a really nice group of people that turn up week in, week out. It's difficult to pick a favourite one. Probably, do you know what, that last game at the Bowling, it was on a Wednesday afternoon,
yeah,
about 2 o'clock over here, and you know, we put it out on Facebook and Twitter that we'd be going, and I kind of jumped off of work, and I don't know, I turned up and I thought, oh, and there might be 5 or 6 people down there, and there was about 45 50 of us.
Oh, shit. Wow.
So a really incredible turnout. And then, so that was one thing. And then the game, obviously, the way it ended, you know, beating United, it was really fantastic. And, it was just a really great atmosphere in the pub. And like I said, everyone's a really good group of lads. And then afterwards, we stayed out way too late. We went to a Cubs game on the whim.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
yeah, straight after the game, yeah, we were asked to leave. But it was totally worth it, and yeah, we had a really good blast. So probably that for me is one of the standout ones. Yeah.
All right. So since Brawley took all the fun questions, or all the important questions, I should say, let me ask you one of my favorite questions. I want to start asking our spotlights. Mm. What is your beer of choice or drink of choice on match day?
For us, it's Modelo. Is our beer?
Yeah, Especial. Yeah,
going Mexican.
Absolutely. Do you know what, it's one of those things as well, because Hudson's, the bar, I think, is the number one seller of Carlsberg in the country.
Really? Holy smokes.
Right. So they sell it by the barrel full every week in, week out. But we tend to go down the Modelo route. Yeah.
All right, that's a good shout. So can you hit us with your Twitter and where fans, other American Hammers, can find you guys, and we'll get it rolling then.
Right on, yeah. So we are on all the usual social media platforms. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/ChicagoHammers. We're on Twitter at ChicagoHammers. We're on Instagram at ChicagoHammers. You can email us, ChicagoHammers@yahoo.com. Or send us a message on Facebook. So if you're in Chicago or you're in the area and you fancy coming down and watching a game with us, you can hit us up on those platforms. Because we love having new people come down and watch with us.
Yeah, I might have to check you guys out again. I was over, I want to say, a year and a half ago, maybe, when the Union played in Chicago. I came over to watch West Ham versus Palace. It was the game we drew 2-2, I believe was that season.
Okay.
Hey, thanks for coming on. We really appreciate it, Brawley.
Yeah, thank Matt. You.
Thanks for listening to this week's West Ham American podcast. Keep the faith. Come on, you Irons.
Come on, you Irons.
Coming in here for West Ham. Would it fall to one of them? It just might be Colton Cole. Vastay! Ricardo Vastay might just have found West Ham.
Now this is more than a hobby, give them more like I'm Bobby. This is my team and they got me, shout out to Billy, we're bonding. We got us 3 cups, mate, I know it ain't too late. We'll turn that 3 into 4 and turn that 4 into 8. So come on you Irons, it's time. Throw on your claret and blue and listen up to this rhyme. 112 years, wow, iconic bowling ground at London Stadium now. Blowing bubbles from the crowd, let the Premier League know. The Irons going for the gold, scoring 100 plus goals like Paulo Di Canio. So kick it off at the homies, known as Brawley and Tony, and keep on blowing those bubbles until they bring us a trophy. I'm forever blowing bubbles, and my fortune's always hiding. It's the American West Ham podcast, y'all best dialing. I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles, and I'm forever blowing bubbles, and my fortune's always hiding. It's the American West Ham podcast, y'all best dialing. I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles. Hey,
I believe it, I know that we're winning. I've been here since the very beginning. Yeah. Dreaming of the gold medal, we're lifting, set it up like we're penalty kicking. 57,000 people packed, hear the fans shout from the back. Take the ball and then we all attack. Make opponents feel the hammer crack. Wild nights, highlight stats, Tony got you covered on that. Brawley got the stories and the facts, together everything is down packed. 3-time gold winners, but now it's time to get another cup. West Ham fans stand up, West Ham fans stand up. I'm forever blowing bubbles, and my fortune's always hiding. It's the American West Ham podcast, y'all best dialing. I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles, said I'm forever blowing bubbles, and my fortune's always hiding. It's the American West Ham podcast, y'all best dialing. I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles. Hey,
big games, big moments, big rewards. Absolutely. And huge disappointment. All season, promotion demanded by West Ham. On a sunny afternoon in May at Wembley, promotion to the Premier League has been delivered. Ricardo Vastay, one of the January arrivals, with the biggest goal he will have ever scored. And West Ham, Wembley winners again.
time since 1980, but more significantly, back in the Premier League.